One of my teachers, Sayadaw Utejaniya, says that the purpose of practice is to develop wisdom. And as we've been talking about this week, this cultivation of wisdom starts with a listening to, a hearing, a beginning with learning about the teachings, and then beginning to apply them, reflecting on them, seeing how they might apply to us, and beginning to take action. And that action is motivated by our faith, our confidence, both in the teachings and in ourselves. And then through that, we begin to have the experience of wisdom, not just have it be theoretical, an idea that somebody's talking to us about, but actually see in our own experience what this wisdom is. Often the word wisdom evokes or conjures up for us some kind of an intellectual understanding, an idea, thoughts, or concept. And initially, the way wisdom comes in, it comes in through ideas, thoughts, and concepts. And yet that's not the kind of wisdom that frees us. My teacher saying the purpose of practice is to develop wisdom, he doesn't mean to develop intellectual learnings. He means to develop the experience of wisdom, to develop the quality of wisdom in our minds, to have that understanding be our own, not just as an idea, but as a direct experience. And so this wisdom, just to remind you, I don't know if you need reminding, we've been saying it all week, this wisdom is around understanding suffering. The wisdom, the frame of the whole, of the exploration of the Buddha was around this question of, can we be free of suffering? And so the wisdom that we develop, that we grow, is basically around understanding what leads us away from suffering, what leads us towards happiness. And so understanding the causes in our mind that take us in the direction of suffering, understanding the causes in the mind that take us towards happiness, this is wisdom. Sometimes wisdom sounds so grand, but actually it can be quite simple. One of the most succinct definition or way of looking at this is that the qualities of mind, the things in our mind, the causes that lead us to suffering are states of mind related to greed, related to aversion, related to delusion. And what takes us in the other direction, towards happiness, towards well-being, towards peace, are those states of mind rooted in non-greed, non-aversion, non-delusion. Or to put it more positively, rooted in kindness, generosity, wisdom. The effort in our practice, this another one of the faculties that Kamala talked about last night, the energy and effort, is directed towards cultivating the wholesome, those qualities that lead us away from suffering, and letting go of abandoning the unwholesome. And so the cultivating the wholesome is about cultivating those beautiful qualities of mind that support freedom. There's a whole long list of these. Metta is one of them, and so the practice that we do in the evening of metta is cultivating wholesome qualities, in the same terrain of metta are compassion and sympathetic joy or empathetic joy. And then there are other beautiful qualities of mind that are cultivated as we actually do the work to abandon the unwholesome, the work to understand suffering, as we work to look at the hindrances, look at the states of mind of greed, aversion, delusion. The whole framing, the orientation that the Buddha proposed around understanding these brings a new perspective, and we end up cultivating qualities like mindfulness, concentration, equanimity, calm, peace, joy, also beautiful qualities of mind that are cultivated right in the midst of looking at and understanding suffering. And so we have these two sides of our practice, cultivating the wholesome, abandoning the unwholesome, and yet they happen together also. You may have noticed in the metta practice, sometimes we talked about how the metta practice is a purification practice, and how even while cultivating the beautiful qualities of mind, we see what gets in the way of that. And so even in the active cultivation of the beautiful quality of metta, there is an abandoning of the holding back, of the tightening of the tension. And so these two sides of wisdom really interplay with each other. So the growing of wisdom, the point of the practice to grow wisdom, is because it is wisdom that frees us. Not the intellectual kind, but the direct seeing, the direct recognition in our own experience of the truth of this simple wisdom of what leads to suffering and what leads away from suffering, that embodied wisdom or that deeply understood wisdom is what frees us. The third noble truth states that it's possible to be free of suffering, that there is a cessation of suffering. And the Buddha said that we should realize this cessation of suffering. This cessation of suffering, one of the clearest definitions of it in the suttas, is not stated in the positive as something that we have. It's not defined that way. It's defined as the freedom from greed, freedom from aversion, freedom from delusion. The absence of, the letting go of greed, aversion, and delusion is this freedom. So it's not about acquiring. It's about letting go. From the Buddha. If greed, hatred, and delusion are given up, one aims neither at one's own ruin, nor at the ruin of others, nor at the ruin of both, and experiences no mental pain and grief. This is Nibbana, the word for freedom in the Pali language, Nibbana. The Sanskrit is nirvana, which may be the more common word. This is Nibbana, immediate, visible in this life, inviting, attractive, and comprehensible to the wise. And I talked about this, a section of this yesterday or a couple days ago, this experience of the absence of greed, aversion, and delusion. The Buddha says, the experience of that is no mental pain and grief. That would be the what we might call the ultimate experience of wisdom. No mental pain and grief. And he also says this is freedom, immediate, here and now, visible in this life, possible to see in this life. That's something that I take joy in, a gladness in, the possibility of freedom in this life. It's not about somehow transcending to some other plane. Right in the midst of this life, he says, this is possible. Freedom from greed, aversion, and delusion. And so, you know, we're probably not going to have this ultimate, complete ending of greed, aversion, and delusion today. Or probably even on this retreat, although it's always possible. There are stories in the suttas. One story in particular, I love this story. There's a story of a group of monks who are having a Dharma discussion. And a couple of the monks were kind of almost arguing about something, and this one monk realized how they were misunderstanding a particular topic. And so he gave them a little Dharma talk to help them see more clearly. And it is said, the very last line in the sutta was, and during this Dharma discussion, all of the monks became fully awakened, even the speaker. Because the speaker was not fully awakened. He got enlightened by his own Dharma talk. This makes me really, really happy, this possibility. So it's always possible. So we can always open to that truth at any time. Immediate, visible in this life. And yet, what I want to point to today are some of the ways that we experience wisdom in our practice. The small ways that wisdom becomes apparent to us. One teacher, Bhikkhu Buddhadasa, Ajahn Buddhadasa, he's a great Thai teacher from last century, we can say that now. And he had this, he wrote a Dharma talk, in which he basically was enjoining the lay people who loved his teachings, who came to hear his teachings, and he gave a lot of teachings for lay people. And he was giving this teaching for lay people saying, Nibbana is for everyone. It's not just for people who are in monasteries, it's for everyone. And here he says, anyone can see that if states of greed, aversion, and delusion were with us all day and all night, every second without ceasing, living things must either die or become insane. Let us consider that we survive because there are periods that the fires of greed, aversion, and delusion are not burning. And he calls this temporary nibbana. Moments when greed, aversion, and delusion aren't operating in our minds. And Joseph Goldstein points out that actually this happens to us through the day. Moments when greed, aversion, and delusion fall away happen to us a lot. And yet he says, we don't notice it because our attention is attuned to much more gross phenomenon, much more obvious phenomenon. The ending of greed, the ending of aversion, the ending of delusion, that experience is pretty subtle. We're not usually attuned to things not being there. We're much more attuned to things, you know, we're much more attuned to when things are there. So the absence of, seeing the absence of, is not something that we're quite attuned to. And so we explore our practice, we bring our mindfulness to our experience, and this cultivation of mindfulness of our experience begins to let the mind start to see some of these letting goes, some of the ways the mind releases its holding. Now, this tends to happen in stages, in layers, let's say. You know, we might start by seeing a letting go around a major habit or a major habit pattern in our minds. For myself, you know, anger was such a major habit in my mind. And as I began exploring and practicing with the tools of mindfulness, I began getting some space around the anger. So a little bit of wisdom began to grow around being with that experience. And so the grosser levels, the full-blown rage began to disappear. So this was some releasing. The mind actually began to see, I think I talked about this the other day, the mind began to see the process of anger happening more quickly. The mind had attuned to what the experience of anger was, and so it didn't get as out of control. This is wisdom at work. Seeing that the mind is not as reactive as it has been. So wisdom appears in different ways at different times, at different levels in our practice. Sometimes we can bring wisdom in consciously. We can, having learned, heard some of the teachings, we can remind ourselves of that wisdom, kind of borrow it, in effect. Even if we're not, for instance, seeing the impermanence of a state of mind, we can remind ourselves, this miserableness, this is impermanent. So bringing in the wisdom kind of with reflection, this can be a very helpful tool for us. Examples of this, I mean, there's some basic wisdom teachings of the Buddha that we can use this way. This is impermanent, it will pass. This is nature. This is nature. This is the framing of from my teacher, Sayadaw Utejaniya. And to me, this wisdom, it's basically pointing to the wisdom of the fact that everything is a process. Everything is just a set of changing causes and conditions unfolding in a natural way, unfolding according to natural law as a tree grows from a seed. An acorn grows into an oak tree. That's nature, that happens. The arising of whatever's happening in our minds is happening because of conditions and causes. We start to really appreciate this as we practice, and we can remind ourselves of this truth. And sometimes the way I'll frame this to myself is, you know, depression is arising. It's like, of course this is arising. Or anger. Of course anger is arising. Look at how much I've practiced anger. Of course this is arising. Or a feeling of self-hatred, looking and seeing the causes and conditions that have led to this. Just reminding myself, this is just the natural process unfolding. To me, this points to the kind of impersonal nature of the happenings in our experience. Our experience is a result of causes and conditions, choices that have been made in the past, circumstances, conditions from the past. And so kind of as a reminder, and this one tool for me was very helpful when I was struggling in the monastery. Just a reminder, yes, this is nature. This is nature. This mind state that's arising right now, it's just like some bush that's growing. This is the bush that's arising now. This is the flower that's growing now. This is the weed that's growing now. This is nature. So we can use wisdom kind of consciously in this way. The three kind of key insights of pieces of bits of wisdom that we eventually experience are around understanding impermanence, understanding the unreliability of experience, and understanding the coreless, not self nature of experience. So these three we can use as reflections. This is impermanent. This is unreliable. Or this is not me. This is not mine. This is not who I am. Miserableness is happening. It is not me. It is a process, not a thing. It's not who I am. So we can remind ourselves using these. So this is one way that wisdom can be experienced, through this conscious borrowing, essentially, bringing it in consciously. As we start to practice, we can also have wisdom that seems to arise intuitively, that we can see, like for instance, you know, we're paying attention to something, and we might see, it would be really helpful to just let go of the thoughts and settle into the body right now. And that kind of intuition can be acted on. We can choose to act on that wisdom. The little bit of wisdom that I learned early in my practice, one of the first books that I read, kind of got the idea, might be helpful to turn and look at your experience, the experience of the emotions, rather than acting on them. And so that was some wisdom that I could choose to act on when mindfulness was present. I could turn and look at my experience. And so sometimes wisdom comes up that we can choose to actually act on. And then we start to see the benefits of that. And then as wisdom gets even stronger, sometimes wisdom simply arises and takes charge. And it's like it happens in a split second. It's nothing that it feels like I'm doing, but the mind sees something, the mindfulness witnessing experience sees something. And in this, the very seeing, the wisdom is there, and wisdom meets it. And something that might happen there is that a defilement might just simply vanish. We're observing anger, and then it's gone. This happened at one point for me on a retreat. I think this is the first time I saw this, so it's quite embedded in my mind. You know, so sometimes the first time we see particular kinds of wisdom, it like gets seared into our brain. And so this one's like that for me. It was on a 3-month course, and it was right between the two halves of the 3-month course. And at the 3-month course, there's a teaching team for the first half and a teaching team for the second half. And I knew I was going to get I might have some teachers the same, but I knew I was going to have at least one new teacher because one of my teachers was leaving. He wasn't going to be there for the second part of the retreat. And boy, I felt abandoned. You know, I was doing some yoga in the yoga room and was just feeling so sorry for myself. And I felt like a 4-year-old, you know. Where's daddy going? You know, I had that sense. And so I was observing the experience, and there was kind of a sense of opening to it. I was with it. I was observing it and with it in a way. And I could tell this feeling of being like a 4-year-old and feeling the sense of a kind of compassion for this 4-year-old who was feeling so abandoned. And so there was some wisdom there in the ability to hang with the feeling of being abandoned. But then the mind, kind of on its own, said, well, what is this feeling of abandoned? What is this? And as soon as the mind went to look at it, it vanished. And I was like, huh, that's weird. I actually thought I had made a mistake. I thought I had done something wrong, and that, I mean, what the story I told myself was, gosh, I must not know how to observe emotions. And so I went to my teacher and I told her, I don't know how to observe emotions. And she said, well, what did you experience? And I said, well, I experienced that as soon as the mind went to look at it, it vanished. And she said, trust your experience. Trust your experience. That was an experience of wisdom. The wisdom created the conditions for that to just vanish. It was the strangest thing. I mean, I had been so caught in it. And then, so that is one way wisdom can be experienced. Now that doesn't happen that often. I mean, it can at some points happen that you turn to look at something and it just vanishes. But much of the time, the experience of wisdom, I'd say one of the main kind of experiences of wisdom is a sense of a shift of perspective that we have around something difficult. We're paying attention to some challenging experience. And this maybe could be seen in this example that I gave, initially feeling just completely caught in this abandoned, believing abandoned, right? Completely believing abandoned. I've been abandoned. And then recognizing that it was possible to hang out with it with this sense of compassion. Oh, this is what it's like to be feeling abandoned. So that shift, where the mindfulness can open to and be with an experience. We've been talking about that a lot. Meeting experience, hanging out with experience, being with experience, allowing experience, opening to experience, all of these different ways of speaking about it. That opening to, allowing, being with can create the conditions that, like, take us from being caught right in the middle of it to having some space, a feeling of space around it. And what's really, I think, part of what's happening there is wisdom is releasing some of the identification with that state. So it's no longer, I'm angry, I'm depressed, I'm abandoned, but anger is happening, depression is happening, abandoned feeling is happening, so that there's not the feeling of being, it's so taking so personally. So this is one of the kind of main ways we experience wisdom, that shift. And I know you've all experienced something like that. Just that, oh, this is just, pick your favorite mind state. This is just loneliness. This is just worry. This is just anxiety. when that shift happens, the possibility there is that the wisdom then creates the conditions for the that state to kind of unwind in its own time, in its own accord, to its own way. So it's kind of like putting a car into neutral. You know, if you're really engaged in a pattern of struggle or suffering, you know, typically what's happening there is that there's a lot of thoughts and they're feeding an emotion, and then the emotion produces more thoughts and those feed the emotion, and it's like just cycling. And the wisdom of, oh, this is just loneliness, rather than, oh, this is loneliness, oh, I'm never going to be happy again, and oh, he abandoned me, and oh, this is terrible, and how am I going to live, and all of that kind of fueling the loneliness. Oh, this is loneliness. This is just loneliness. It's like taking the gears out, you know, taking the gears out from being engaged with each other. So it's like putting a car into neutral. When you're engaged in those thoughts and emotion cycle, it's like you got your foot on the accelerator. You're going like, you know, 100 miles an hour down the freeway. That shift, this is just like putting the car into neutral. The car doesn't stop when you take your foot off the accelerator and put it into neutral. It keeps going, but it will come to a stop of its own accord, because it's no longer being fueled. So very similarly, that shift, this is just, allows us to witness the kind of unwinding of our patterns in a very natural way. And in that witnessing, we learn a lot about how the mind is holding on. The mind actually learns a lot about how it's holding on. It learns how to let go. Another way that we experience wisdom, that sense of insight, is when we, so that maybe just a different way of framing the same thing in a way, that we see experience as simply something that's happening now. So, for instance, you know, with thoughts, often when thoughts arise, a memory arises. There's a kind of a way, when we're not mindful, not aware, not present, there's a way that we take birth into the world of that thought. It's like it becomes our world. And we're living in that world, not seeing that this is simply something that's arising in the present moment. It's like we've taken birth into that memory or that construct and believe it as a reality. And in that taking birth into that, it's like you know, a bubble of a world has been created in our mind, and we're acting and moving in that world, and we are responding. Our emotions respond to that mental creation. It's like when I was in a relationship with this person, we had a kind of contentious relationship at times, and I would have these thoughts about things that I imagined he might do. And I would take birth into that and get angry at him for these things that he might do. The mind will do that. It will create a world and then react and respond. We don't see often this arising of thought, whether about the past or an idea about the future, we often don't see it as simply something that's happening in the present moment. And then we don't see either that the emotions, the reactions, the responses that are arising are also something that's happening just in the present moment, in fact, constructed in the present moment. Our dukkha is actually constructed right now. You know, we have a thought that arises about something that happened in the past, for instance. Something, you know, a person has done something in the past, and a thought arises, and we get angry all over again about what that person did in the past. And sometimes it feels like, you know, that anger is the old anger. It's the same anger that was happening in the past. But what's actually happening is that you're sitting there minding your own business, right? Nothing, you're just hanging out, doing whatever, and suddenly a thought arises. The mind doesn't see that it's something happening in the present moment. It believes the thought. It takes birth into that world. It reacts in the moment, right then and there. That reaction, the response, is happening right in that moment. Our suffering is created now. We take birth in that suffering right now. It's not the same anger that was happening 6 years ago or whenever that thing happened. It is new suffering that's arising now based on the condition of a thought arising in the present moment now. And so this wisdom of starting to see, this is something that's arising right now. That's a way it can be understood, or a way that it's felt. Oh, this is just something that's happening right now. This is just an arising in this moment. It cuts through that bubble, that delusion of taking birth. That wisdom, that experience of wisdom, cuts through that delusion of taking birth into that world. And we just see, oh, this is a thought. Or we see, this is a response to that thought happening right now. Another way that wisdom manifests, is experienced in the present moment, is as the mindfulness gets more continuous, the mind begins to recognize and understand the relationships between moments. It understands cause and effect, essentially. It begins to understand the conditioned nature of experience directly, not as an idea, not as a... Sometimes when we pay attention to our experience or notice our experience, we want to understand why something is happening. This is very common. It seems to be a very human thing to want to understand the why of something. Like we, you know, see a pattern arising repeatedly, a pattern of loneliness, a pattern of depression, and we want to understand the why, and we go into kind of an analysis. We think about it, maybe go back and think about what our family history was like and what was happening on the playground when we were kids and how we always got, like, you know, left out of the games. And, well, that's got to be related to why I always feel so lonely in groups right now. And, you know, we do that. Our minds do that kind of figuring out why something's happening. In our practice, it's actually more helpful to come into just this moment, seeing moment to moment, things are happening now, things are happening now, just to look at what is happening moment to moment. So loneliness is arising. What is that experience? Moment to moment, what is the experience of loneliness? In that witnessing moment to moment, the mind begins to understand how that loneliness is actually being created right now. Again, coming back to the immediacy of these states of mind that are happening. And so in the continuity of mindfulness, The mind starts to see the unfolding and begins to understand the why of the present moment. Not the why of 8 years ago or 20 years ago, but the why of now. The reason or the cause in the moment. Why is this happening? This is a very powerful insight. As the mind starts to see that, it basically, the wisdom that happens there is that the mind sees through this cause and effect link that it is causing its own suffering. So it gets an education. And through that education, the mind itself recognizes this is not helpful. This is not a good way to go. And this can happen in kind of mysterious ways. I'll tell a story from this happened in the first 3 months of my practice. Actually, before I had even done much sitting meditation, my early practice was very much around looking at the ways my emotions were ruling my life. And I was very motivated to understand the difficult emotions in my life. And one of those was loneliness. A partner had broken up with me, and I was seeing a lot of loneliness. And, you know, the why of loneliness wasn't particularly mystifying to me. What seemed to be happening is one of the times I was really feeling lonely was as I was going to bed at night. It's like, well, no big mystery there. So I thought, you know, of course I'm lonely going to bed at night, you know. So there was this feeling like I thought I understood why I was lonely. But I was still interested in kind of the learning about the loneliness. And so every night as I saw this loneliness arise, I would just hang with it. You know, this was my first couple months of meditation practice, and I knew very little. I was in the Peace Corps, so I was in a third world country in the middle of the South Pacific. I had a book. A friend had sent me a book about mindfulness, and it gave me some ideas, but like I had very little clue what it meant to be mindful. But I could tell. I could see loneliness is happening. It was kind of like knowing that loneliness was happening. So that's what I did. Each night I would just know, loneliness is happening. Okay, loneliness is happening. So each night I would do that. And one night while I was going to bed, I noticed that the loneliness started, and it seemed very clear, actually. It was like I set my alarm clock, and the loneliness started. It's like, what? What on earth does loneliness have to do with setting my alarm clock? I had no idea, but I just kept watching each night, looking at this each night. It was clear that each night, having seen that, it was a repeating pattern. It happened regularly with that setting of the alarm clock. And then one night while I was setting the alarm clock, again, just kind of, okay, loneliness is happening. I wasn't like trying to dig or to find it out. It really was kind of a, you know, settled back. Just, I didn't even know what to look for. I hadn't had any teachers tell me anything about things to look for. It's just like, okay, loneliness hanging out. And one night as I was setting the alarm clock, I picked up the alarm clock and I saw in my mind a memory, an image of being with my ex-partner in Disneyland, and we were looking up at a marquee in Tomorrowland where there was a digital clock. So I could see the connection, the causal link between what I was doing and the memory. And then I could also see that the loneliness was a response to that memory. Something like, oh, we were so happy then. I'm never going to be happy again. The why of the loneliness was revealed in that moment. The why of the loneliness arising in that moment to a fleeting image in the mind that hadn't been seen until that moment. A fleeting image. The loneliness responding to that. You know, it was kind of shocking. It was kind of mind-boggling. Like, wow. Mindfulness can reveal these subtle currents of mind that lead to these habitual tendencies. So that was pretty amazing that night. But the next night was kind of even more amazing because I pick up the alarm clock to set my alarm clock to go to bed, and of course I remembered the memory, but the loneliness did not arise. Somehow the wisdom of having seen the causal connection took the power out of that. It's the seeing it itself kept the mind from spinning in the direction of loneliness. Now, I'm not saying that I didn't get lonely again. Of course I got lonely. But that regular every night going to bed lonely stopped. So this is also the experience of wisdom, seeing in the moment the cause of our suffering, the triggers for the way our minds react. And in that moment again, you know, it wasn't something that I did. The wisdom took care of it. I was simply, the activity that I was consciously engaged in was being mindful. The wisdom freed the mind from that difficulty. So, seeing the cause and effect relationship unfolds by not by looking for the why, but by being willing to stay with what is happening moment after moment. What is happening? The mind begins to understand how all of these what's relate to each other in its own wisdom. Not because we're telling it to. Wisdom often grows slowly. It's not, and sometimes these, you know, amazing, wow, look at that, you know, abandonment vanished, just whew. Sometimes those happen. More often, I think there's, at least in my own experience, in my own practice, there's been more often a very gradual growth of wisdom. Almost growing silently in the background, not being seen, like grain by grain, wisdom cultivated, wisdom developed, and I'm not even consciously aware that it's happening. So sometimes wisdom operates in the background, kind of silently this way. And then almost later, after the fact, we see, wow, something isn't there anymore. So one example of this, I've talked about how anger has been a great teacher of mine, one of my best teachers, I would say, exploring anger. And there was a period of time when I realized that trying to observe the anger was just taking me right back down the rabbit hole of anger. And so I began to see, it's like each time the anger arose, the way I started working with it at that point, for that period of time, several months, I was like, okay, I see you, anger. It would be like I'd bow to it. I see you, anger. And this was wisdom too. This is the experience of wisdom too. The experience of wisdom of knowing when to turn away. When the mind is not ready to meet something. This is wisdom. It's not a failure. It's actually wisdom to see, you know, I saw over and over again, trying to be mindful at that point in time just made me more angry. And so each time I saw the anger, I'd be like, I see you, anger, and I'd like bow to it. And I'd like have a little conversation with it and say, I know you really think it's important, but this is not a good time. I'll pay attention to you when my mindfulness gets stronger. So I'd have that little conversation with my anger. And it'd be like, I set it aside. So it wasn't a pushing away. It wasn't an aversion. It wasn't a saying, you're bad, you're wrong, you've got to go away. It was a, I see you and not now. I'm going to let you be. You do your thing. I'm going to put my attention in my feet. I'm going to pay attention to my feet right now. And I did that over and over and over again for a long period of time. And I began noticing, at some point I began noticing that the periods of, or the bouts, the explosions of anger were coming less frequently. And so this is, I would say, an experience of wisdom, the recognizing that things are arising, difficulty is arising less frequently. It's like noticing the non-arising of our habits. Actually really helpful to recognize when our habitual patterns are not coming up. And so I began to notice this. Gosh, anger isn't coming up as much anymore. And it would still, it would explode, and I see you, not now. And they just, the bouts of anger seem to get further and further apart. This was a specific anger. This is not all anger. This was anger at a particular person. One, the anger about this partner who had broken up with me when I was in the Peace Corps. You know, this was a three-year exploration of anger around this person. It was a long, long process. And so, you know, this was the exploration, I see you, not now. And over the course of months, seeing that kind of the bouts of anger getting further apart. And then one day, I recognized anger wasn't there. So again, that's an experience of wisdom. Anger's not here. Gosh, I haven't experienced that anger in a really long time. And even with that memory coming up, that thought coming up at that moment, of course the memory of my ex-partner came into my mind because the anger had been tied to my ex-partner. So of course that person came into my mind. I couldn't even conjure up the anger. It was gone. And it has never come back. So there was that. And in fact, it transformed over, you know, my relationship to that person transformed over the next few years towards one where it's just like, I hope you're happy. I just really hope you're happy. So the wisdom sometimes operates that way, just kind of silently in the background. I didn't see that anger disappear. It disappeared while I wasn't looking. And yet there was the wisdom that showed me it was gone. So sometimes things, the patterns disappear over a very long period of time. In my experience, that's a lot of the way my difficulties have fallen away. It's not like the mind-blowing. I thought when I first started practice, it'd be like I'd practice, and suddenly there'd be like this big explosion or something, and ever after that, I'd be happy. And, you know, it's not that way. It's grain by grain, moment by moment, just this very slow wearing away of ignorance and arising of wisdom. There's an analogy that the Buddha uses about the cultivation or the development. Now, I wouldn't say the cultivation, the development of our practice. He says, think about a shipwreck. You know, the parts of the ship are strewn all over the beach. And, you know, the sun, the sand, the wind, the water kind of wear away at those parts of the ship. If you think about that analogy, each day if you went to that beach and looked at any one of those parts, like the rope, looked at a piece of rope, and just looked at it each day it's not going to look much different. But every day those forces of nature are working on those parts of the ship. And if you come back a year later and try to pick up that rope, it may fall apart in your hands. This is much the way our practice unfolds. Sometimes we don't see the development of wisdom. It happens kind of silently in the background, and yet at some point we recognize, wow, that's not there anymore. We see patterns that have tied us into knots. And, you know, sometimes this kind of wisdom becomes apparent in reflecting back over some years of practice. You know, looking back to see, wow, you know, if this had happened 10 years ago, if you've been practicing for 10 years, and you know, if this had happened at the beginning of my practice, wow, I would be a mess. But right now, it just feels like a little irritation. Wow, that's a difference. That's a manifestation of wisdom. That is the experience of wisdom. This experience of wisdom is what leads us to the, it is the verifying of faith. So this is where wisdom and faith come right together. As we experience wisdom, as we see these insights, our faith just gets very strong, because we know for ourselves the value of the practice. We know for ourselves the truth of the wisdom that we've been working with. And these insights that happen, the moments that we see clearly like that, those shifts, this is just anger. Oh, wow. We can see that, and there's like a releasing, a letting go, and it's just like, this is okay, I can hang with anger. Those insights, they're impermanent. They come and they go, and we get caught again and again. It's not a mistake that you've made, you know. Sometimes we think, with the kind of orientation we usually have towards wisdom and knowledge, it's like you pick something up, you read it, you learn it, it's like you've got it. You can apply it from then on. The wisdom of the insights is not like that. It's a coming together of causes and conditions that allows a seeing in a moment. It allows the shift of understanding in a moment. And we're not always in that place where the mind can see from that perspective. And yet, having seen that shift, we know it's possible. This is, again, the development of wisdom. While we may not be in the place where we have access to the experience of the wisdom, this is just anger. We may not have access to that in the moment, but we know it's possible. That gives us confidence. That gives us faith to go on, because that verified faith is there. It has been verified. That isn't taken away. The experience may not be there in that moment. And yet, because we know the possibility, it encourages us to keep practicing. And we learn in those times about dukkha. we learn about suffering. Understanding suffering, this is our practice. And actually, you know, I love talking about suffering. You might have noticed. Because there's so much we can learn and understand. And, you know, one thing that begins to happen to us as we meet suffering in this way is that we begin to experience the joy of engaging. We see that we're no longer at the mercy of these patterns of mind. And there's the joy of engagement. And the joy of knowing mindfulness is being cultivated, wisdom is developing. Sometimes that joy can support us also. So let's just sit for a moment.